Well. Welcome back. Brand new, spanking new, all sorts of new episode of Lo-Fi Lit. Today, Jennifer Ostapovich is talking to Elizabeth Ellen. Jennifer is a fan, and I didn't know how this was going to come out. It just came together. Really fucking great episode. Jennifer did an amazing job. I invited her on because she's new. She kind of just come into writing on the indie scene the last few years. I've always felt like when you're new, you don't really kind of get these kind of opportunities. And I remember coming up and just being around the scene and always wanting to do something like this, but no one ever afforded anyone like the opportunity to go on a podcast. And I always wanted to afford people an opportunity to do something like that, where they're a fan of someone and they can interview them, they can sit down and have a conversation. And so we're doing that today. That's what's happening. Jennifer says Hobart was also one of the first places to pick up her short stories. Then when she was shopping an essay around to all the usual essay places, she got a lot of "this is really good, but not for us." She said that it's heavily critical of the mental health care system, and it talks about her dad's death. He was schizophrenic and died in a shootout with police during a mental health crisis. And she sent it to Elizabeth Ellen to see if Elizabeth would take it. And not only was Elizabeth enthusiastic about publishing it, she actually had Jennifer double the word count and published the piece as two separate essays. So that's kind of why people like Jennifer, they take to Elizabeth Ellen, because Elizabeth Ellen encourages them not only to keep writing, but like to double down. I also saw this with Unity back in the day when Unity was just starting, because Unity would always go to the Misery Loves Companies every Friday. And let me tell you, Elizabeth Ellen was very, very supportive. Those two were like two peas in a pod. Elizabeth Ellen and Unity were very close. When people like this, being a writer, when other places won't accept you, Hobart does. And so that's why really new people really take it. Elizabeth Ellen, that's why I want to give someone an opportunity to talk with someone that they really like. However we feel about Elizabeth Ellen, it doesn't fucking matter, because that's not what we're doing today. So, all right. Can I ask you about Ellen and Asher? Is that a, you don't want to go there?
On recording, or yeah, you can.
What happened?
My perspective, because I don't know, she would probably say something different, but after the 22 Alex Perez interview scandal, from my perspective, I guess like she and I were like very, very close friends, like maybe best friends, and she had like a book deal, and I feel like she was a little bit apprehensive to support me in fearing she might lose that book deal. And I wanted, you know, I asked her to be a Hobart editor, and she didn't want to do that, at least not initially, like maybe down the road or something, even though she'd been a Hobart editor before. Anyway, I think she just got fearful of losing that good book deal that she had for Deliver Me, and I kind of wasn't gracious with that, and so like it hurt me, so I was just like, okay, I guess we're just not gonna be friends right now.
Do you think you'll be friends again?
I hope so. I actually was thinking about her the other day, and I don't know if she was receptive to it. I would definitely, you know, like to be friends with her.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. Because, like, you guys could both do something on Zona. Which
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I haven't reached out, so I don't know what her thoughts are on it. But maybe we'll test those waters coming up. We'll see.
That'd be dope. How long have you known Julia?
Oh. Whenever she and Scott McClanahan started dating, because I was good friends with him first, and then I remember him saying he was dating this woman, and he wanted me to, I don't remember if he wanted me to read her writing, or, you know, just was hoping we'd be friends, and at first I was like, just because you're dating her doesn't mean that I'm going to like her, but then I ended up loving her, and we're, you know, good friends. So.
Yeah, I was reading an interview you did with Scott in, like, 2012 on, like, the Nervous Breakdown. It was cool.
Yeah, I love Scott. He's one of my favorite people, and I love Julia, too.
Does Aaron still help with Hobart, like, on the site?
No. We share a dog. I just saw him the other day because I had to drop our dog off while I'm in New York. But he doesn't do anything with Hobart. Crow Jonah helps me with Hobart.
Oh, he also helps Aaron.
Yeah, yeah. He's just a really sweet person. He's not, like, going to be political or take sides. He's just very helpful and kind.
Do you think their people are, like, political? Like, would take sides?
Yeah, there's, you know, even with a divorce, people feel like they need to support somebody by not...
Yeah, that's weird. I see, like, people, like, fans of yours, they, like, attack Aaron. I'm like, I think they're still cool.
Fans of mine attack Aaron?
Like, they were being hostile towards him because I saw a couple of tweets once.
I always see the opposite, like people that used to be kind of both our friends, but were more his friend. And so I never really saw that other side. But Aaron's so sweet. I wouldn't want anybody to attack him. He's like the nicest.
Yeah. I always thought you guys were just like still cool. Even though it's a divorce, it's like y'all can still be friends. And that's the vibe that I always got.
Yeah. And he was an amazing stepfather. So my daughter's still in touch with him too, obviously.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, good, good.
Good. How's New York?
It is. I just got here yesterday, but it's good. I went to a play last night and it was fun. So.
What did you guys see?
Oh my God! Don't make me say. I never know how to say Waiting for
Godot.
Yeah, but you don't say Godot. It's like
Godot. Godot.
Yeah. Something else. It was good.
That's awesome. So, Tyler, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So on this, what were you planning on?
Me?
Yeah.
I just have a bunch of questions, like just stuff that I thought we could chat about, ask Elizabeth Ellen. I don't know. You just like invited me and I'm kind of winging it. I've never done this before, so it's a first for me.
Well, yeah, because I think it's cool just to have like someone that's a fan, and it's not a dude, because like a lot of dudes have podcasts.
Yeah, I'm a favorite. True. There's not a lot of female podcasters, are there?
No.
I'm a fan of Jennifer's writing, so I'm excited.
Oh, that's awesome! Well, thanks for coming. I'm so excited to have like this opportunity to be able to chat with you. This was really, really cool for me. I'm so isolated here out in Calgary. There's like zero literary scene. So it's great to be able to like actually like face to face with other writers. Like I don't get to do that very often. So yeah, this is really cool.
What's the closest indie bookstore?
Oh, I'm about a half hour away from an indie bookstore. So there's a couple downtown. We're like way kind of out on the edge of the city, not by choice, but we kind of had to settle for a house out on the edge of the city because the market here was crazy. We've been on like 15 houses. It was nuts. Yeah, so we're kind of like out in the middle of nowhere and there's really nothing but box stores and houses for like miles and miles and miles. So yeah. And you're in Michigan.
Yeah. I'm in a suburb of Detroit north, like half an hour. So.
Okay. Nice. I used to go to Detroit when I was about 19. I lived in Windsor for a couple of years, and we used to go visit, and it's great.
Yeah, yeah. I've been over there too, quite a bit. So we're so close to Canada, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Cool. So are we live? Like, are we
Yeah,
starting?
we're going.
We're going. Okay, great. So first of all, thanks for coming. I'm so thrilled to be able to interview you, and thank you, Tyler, for inviting me to host. So I guess I should introduce you. Today I'm interviewing Elizabeth Ellen, the editor-in-chief at Hobart, and Short Flight, Long Drive books. She is a prolific author. She has multiple novels and short story collections, and her newest novel, American Thighs, is out now at Clash Books.
Yes, thanks. Good intro.
So, oh, thanks. Okay, so I sort of first came online and started like really kind of writing and getting into writing around the time of the Hobart scandal.
Oh, okay.
So you like sort of instantly became for me like a literary icon, hero sort of. It was kind of weird to me as someone who hadn't ever participated in any of the like discourse and doesn't have any like academic background or anything like that, to kind of come online and see everybody kind of going nuts over like nothing. So I feel like you weathered it so well. And hopefully you're not too bruised from the experience. Are you feeling kind of maybe vindicated now that everything's sort of doing a 180 and people are going back to sort of speaking kind of a little more freely about things?
I don't feel vindicated in that I see zero emails coming in asking me to do anything, and I can't get published, and I can't get an agent, and I can't. So not to be like whiny about it, but it definitely is still costing me pretty much everything other than the
Your
freedom.
integrity.
Yeah, the freedom to like put what we want in Hobart.
Right.
And so like maybe in the future, I don't know. It seems to take like 10, 15 years for people to move past things like this.
Well, hopefully for you it's the long game and people like start to realize the value of what you've been doing, like in the face of all of what has been going on and kind of the like censure that like all these literary kind of magazines and publishers have been experiencing. And most like you talk to people and most people aren't really they don't feel the way that like you know th that everything kind of shows publicly. So it's like a vocal minority that was kind of leading the charge, but people are kind of scared, I think. So hopefully that for you is going to be something that people will recognize later
Yeah,
or
sure. Yeah.
soon, hopefully.
Well, that's what with the first cancellations effects had just started to go away, and I was getting asked to do things when this, because that was in 2014, and then this happened in 2022. So like, whatever. It is what
But
it is.
like you didn't even like say anything. It was like the other guy that said the shit.
Right.
Well, people said I should have pushed back, and in my lazy interview style is I send the questions. I never push back. I just like whatever they answer, what they answer, and I don't like go back and
I think regardless though, there was nothing wrong with the interview. Like he just gave an opinion. Like it's not
yeah.
like he was, you know, advocating for like you know, for people to take away women's rights or something. It was just kind of a silly opinion that like, you know, you could laugh and be like, oh, that guy's kind of stupid, right? Like,
Yeah, and I think he was trying to have humor and be kind of silly with a lot of things that you can't be silly and have humor. They have to be dead serious and
right.
well, he told like Stephanie, who's an editor at Hobart, like he was like trying to play a heel or something, like a wrestling character.
Yeah, that makes sense now.
Yeah, I don't think he should have done that, but whatever. Because it like cost you like so much, and like it didn't really cost him anything, I don't think.
Well, he didn't. Not that I had it. Yeah, because he wasn't trying to publish seriously, and I don't think he is now. So I think he benefited. I don't know, not to be whiny again, but whatever. I don't regret it.
Well, I mean, if it means anything, it meant a lot to me coming into kind of the literary scene at that time and seeing someone sort of stand up for just like common sense. Like it's really not a big deal. And yeah, it meant a lot to me because I was seeing a lot of things that I didn't like in the industry and feeling like maybe it wasn't a place I wanted to be. And your stance kind of like solidified for me that, you know, there are good people out here still like doing good things and not being ridiculous. So
Right. That's the major takeaway for me was like when the person was like, this is white supremacy, like going to some hysterical, it doesn't even make any sense. So for just standing up and not apologizing for something that did wasn't even accurate, that's where I'm like, okay, that I feel decent about because everybody gets so scared and they'll just apologize for something that's not even real, like it's not reality. So in that sense, I guess I'm glad that happened and people can see, you know, yeah, you'll pay some prices, but you can still survive.
right. Well, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad to see you're still here
Wait,
and still doing it.
Jennifer, what did you see in the community that you didn't like?
Just like a lot of like censorship, like just people like telling people what they could think and what they could say and how you could act and you know, people are human. They make mistakes and people say stupid stuff sometimes and like you shouldn't one, you know, offside comment shouldn't ruin someone's entire career. It's kind of silly. And I mean, I found that a lot of the stuff like was so serious. Like there's no sense of humor. Like it's just like so dead serious. And it's almost like,
And wanting to believe that somebody's evil or has evil intent.
right. Yeah. Like attributing malice to like really banal things that most people say in their daily lives, you know, it's just kind of silly and it was disheartening to see and I could tell that publishers weren't publishing interesting work because they were scared of what was going to happen.
I was just going to add, I just saw an interview with Chuck Palahniuk, and he said his writing group disbanded in much 2020 because he had a book he was working on where he used the F word in it frequently, and everybody else in the writing group was like, no. And he's like, well, I'm a gay man. I feel like I want to take the power away from that word and I can use it. And everybody else is like, no, we're not comfortable with that. So the group disbanded, which I find very interesting also.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I had a similar experience in a writing group that I hosted. Actually, I was the host of. One girl walked out because I was like writing about mental illness, and she thought it was like derogatory. And it's like, no, you know, it's coming from a place of like of.
Experience and
Yeah, it's not like I'm not being derogatory. It's just really weird. She walked out of the group and never came back after. So it was an interesting experience and kind of made me like leery of the general kind of like climate. Like it just, yeah.
I don't think people know how to push back. I think like if you're gonna use language like that, you're gonna expect some pushback, but like when people do push back, I think they take it over the top and
Right.
they too much hyperbole.
Yeah, that happens too, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So I have a whole bunch of questions for you.
Okay.
I'm sure you're like tired of talking about the Hobart scandal or whatever you want to call it. I'm sure you've talked about it to death. One question I'm really curious. So lately I've noticed online there are a lot of people that are kind of like against like autobiographical, autofictional writing by women. Like there's like a vocal group of people that just like hate it for some reason and are like seem to be attacking like a lot of the like autofiction and like autobiographical style and writers in particular. And like I feel like your work has a lot of autobiographical elements, or maybe at least autofictional, just based on like a lot of the short stories I've read of yours, and your play, I'm guessing, is a little bit.
Yeah. Well, who are the people that are like, I haven't seen this, so who is
Yeah, me
like,
neither.
it's like just very like young kind of indie alt lit type people that are
Ooh.
like, I've seen a lot of it. Danielle, one of your editors catches some heat for
She's
her
been catching a
writing.
lot of heat like today. Like
Yeah,
people
for her
going
writing
after her.
that people kind of come after her a little bit online.
Oh
So
yeah.
I've noticed that. Yeah, it's just kind of like a youngish crowd, mostly men, incel type, I think.
It sounds misogynistic to be broad about it, especially if Danielle, like, why would Danielle be getting heat for anything or what?
Right. It's
It's the sex
ridiculous.
stuff.
Because she's writing about sex and
Yes.
Yeah.
they like that because what don't
Prude.
I don't know. I guess everything's kind of shifting a little bit prudish. I think there's a group of like, or a larger kind of like cultural movement of like incel type men that feel kind of bitter that women have any can get sex because for whatever reason, maybe personality, they can't. And it's getting harder and harder for some certain types of men to pair up because there's no incentive, right, for women to pair up with these guys. So, and that's who I feel personally is kind of doing the attacks and kind of being
It's
anti, yeah.
very similar to the Marie Calloway thing back in the day.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, that just seems like textbook misogyny and uncomfortableness with women and women enjoying sex and writing about it, whatever.
Have you ever experienced any of that in your own work? Has anybody ever kind of come after you for writing about sex and stuff?
No one has ever said anything to me or that I've seen. I would say more pushback writing about certain men and being said that I'm using them or using their name or which also seems a little misogynistic, like yeah, just more the saying that I'm using people or whatever in my writing, or betraying them by writing about them, or something like that.
But what do those people say that like that you I mean you've written about Aaron, but you like base a character off of him. I don't think he gave a shit.
I would say that's something that I've been revisiting that lately. Like, family members were very kind of against that, and at the time I pushed back. Because when we got married, I said, yeah, I want to marry you, but I want to make clear that like my writing, I was just very like, I'm going to write about whatever I want, and if you're uncomfortable with it, then we shouldn't get married. And then I used that thereafter, and now I think I would be more considerate of, not like self-censoring, but more, I don't know, I would think of it differently. So maybe I wouldn't write quite in the same way about a loved one like that.
What's changed?
I think that, well, A, I got sober, and there's a lot of like when you're working in 12 steps, you're working on your character and your character defects and why did I do this, why did I do that. And so I think a lot of self-reflection on why. Was it my ego that did certain things? Because my daughter at the time wasn't comfortable with me writing, not so much about Aaron, but about other people, even in an autofiction, and thinking it would hurt Aaron, which it obviously did. And I don't know. So I'm just thinking back about, I don't know, I'm kind of torn about it because, you want to write honestly, but you also don't want to feel like you're needlessly hurting somebody, so and feeding your ego, over caring about somebody that you love. So it's hard because I always had that sense of protection for my daughter and not wanting to write in a way that would betray her or like show too much of her. And I didn't have that same protection for my spouse. So I think now I probably would feel differently.
Oh, I sort of, yeah, I can see that. I sort of feel the same way. Like my kids, I don't know if I would ever like directly write about them. And if I did, it would be in a respectful way, but my poor husband doesn't have the same kind of protection, I think. So
right.
I totally feel that. But then Aaron, I guess, went into it knowing that you were a writer and you wrote kind of like autobiographical type stuff, whereas I don't think my husband ever expected me to become a writer, so it'd be funny.
But wait, isn't that how you guys met though? You and Aaron, like through like a Zoetrope workshop?
Yeah, so we met, he emailed me after he read one of my pieces and saw my photo online, and then yeah, then we were both in Zoetrope, I think, and then we were in workshops together, and it's kind of blurry, but yeah. But I don't know, there's a lot of caveats and I don't know. I don't regret the past, I guess, but I've just been revisiting some of, like, why do we protect our kids but not our parents in our writing? Why do we protect our kids and not, I don't know. It's because you want to write about everything. You want to write about being a parent and your children, but just usually you're more careful about it. And so, I don't know.
Yeah, I can totally see that it is a bit kind of, it doesn't necessarily make sense, but yeah, I definitely can see wanting to protect your kids from anything. And sometimes like writing about your partner does, you know, kind of affect the kids, right? So.
Right. It still affects the family or the family unit.
Right.
So.
So I just finished reading your play and oh my God, I loved it so much. Like absolutely just like was floored by it. So one thing I noticed was that there's like a little like foreword in the beginning that says you guys performed it in your living room.
It was at our friend's living room, the other couple.
Oh, I love that so much. That's amazing. Do you foresee any future productions or anything else with playwriting maybe?
I'm going to a play tonight by myself, like a play I'd never heard of. And I was thinking about the play because I read a lot of plays before I wrote that. I'd always wanted to be a playwright initially, not a novelist. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I loved Edward Albee and Tennessee Williams and other famous playwrights and Sam Shepard. And so I don't know. I kind of doubt it, but maybe when I'm dead, somebody will perform it. I don't know.
I would love to see it performed live. It would be so cool.
What play did you go see?
This is challenging my self-censorship. It's called Prince Faggot. I hadn't heard of it, but it's a fictional account of Prince William is, no, wait, what's his oldest son?
There's Harry and William. William's the oldest.
But what's William's son's name?
Oh, I don't know.
It's imagining him, I think, growing up
and
being gay.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So anyway, it looks interesting. So I just wanted to go to something by myself and see theater.
That's awesome.
That's a very, like, Unity vibe, if, like, Unity was still around.
I was just emailing with him, but yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
But I wish he was still more involved, but I understand why he's not, but yeah.
So you guys are cool again?
We were never not cool, me and you.
Oh, I thought you, like, banned him or something because he wouldn't promote the book.
No.
No,
he just, for his own, his own decision, decided to distance himself from the literary world, so.
Well, it felt like a kind of a parallel between what happens in the book and what
right.
he's
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, probably. But yeah, I love them.
Okay, cool. Sorry for interrupting, Jennifer.
No, I mean, I'm happy to have everybody chatting. This is great. And it's Elizabeth's interview. I'm just here for the ride.
I'm glad
So.
to clear that up. I didn't know that was the T on Unity. Yeah.
Elizabeth, you talk, you sort of, I haven't read Persona yet, which I would like to. I'd like to get through your whole kind of collection. I noticed you sort of lean into the idea of having a persona. And having read some of your nonfiction, it feels sort of a little bit different to me, like your online persona, than what I get from your work. So how much of Elizabeth Ellen is persona? Like how much of what we see online, and how much is sort of just authentic Elizabeth Ellen?
I think they're both authentic, or I think it's authentic. It's just like, well, my daughter would say when you go to do your tour to do a reading, you wear these crazy clothes and like not stuff that I would necessarily wear at home, or you're just being a little more theatrical. Or the like, she and Aaron used to make fun of my photos. They're like, you don't even know. You look silly in those photos. Like, you look better when we just take candid photos, or, so then it became kind of this, like, in my head, like, well, that's not really me, but it is still. But, I don't know. It's not something I really sit around thinking about. But then autofiction kind of lends itself to also being like, it's a step away from reality, kind of like a film is. Both truthful, but also in the film world. So I just think of it like that. It's a little bit removed somewhat.
Like, do you, I know you don't have Wi-Fi, right?
Not
No.
snow.
So how do you manage, like, I imagine being an editor is quite a like online kind of position. How do you manage without Wi-Fi?
Well, so I have within walking distance, like a 5 or 10 minute walk, there's a I don't know what they call them, like a place where you pay a monthly fee and you can go in and use
Oh, that's great.
services. And so I can go there. Usually I try to work on my writing in the morning and early afternoon, and then maybe do something, and then in the evening, late at night, I go there because there's no one ever there at like between 10 and 1 or something. So I go there and try to get Hobart stuff or emails or whatever I need to do.
Well, it's impressive that you managed to do all that and still have time for your writing. Because you're like, are you working? I feel like I saw on Instagram that you're working on something new.
Yeah, I'm working on a memoir. I was married and divorced in the last 5 years, and I'm working on a memoir that's kind of about that marriage and addiction and my addiction, his addiction, so that kind of stuff.
I love that you write so candidly about everything. I think a lot of people like, especially like I was reading your play and I was like, like I kind of grew up not quite like you, but similar kind of like lots of addiction, lots of like chaos. Yeah, like I think it's so important to like there's not a lot of voices that are sharing that kind of experience because everything's very sort of like I don't know, like university MFA focused, and we're seeing kind of like the type of people that make it into university and MFA programs writing, right? So it's kind of like this kind of like insular kind of thing, but I love that you're contributing, work that speaks to like a different type of, you know, a different type of cultural voice that I think doesn't necessarily get a lot of airtime. How do you feel about what you write about? Are you ever nervous to share like any part of your life, or do you feel?
I think when I'm writing, I usually think I like writing that isn't holding back and it's just telling me all the craziness of the person's life or their thoughts, and as close to capturing their existence as possible. And I try to just write without caring like what it's going to be received, how it's going to be received, or any kind of audience or something. And I also think it would be boring to me too. Like if I'm going to spend all these hours working, I don't want to be bored because I'm not giving of myself. And so I also just like, life is so short. What is the point of writing if you're going to be like keeping stuff off the page? Like it's kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, sorry. A lot of what you said it reminds me of like Molly by Blake Butler. Like it's so immediate and it's raw.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I loved Molly, the book, and yeah, the immediacy, and I'm really drawn to that more than kind of polished writing. So I guess that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I think that's why for me your writing is so compelling. I feel like you really, and I mean, you do this as an editor too. You sort of champion, like marginalized writers and newer writers too, that a lot of places won't publish because the writing isn't quite as like, as polished, you know, it doesn't have that workshop feel to it. Right?
That's what I was thinking when I was answering that question and then you asked the follow-up, because I was thinking where, I don't know where to publish. I don't know where Blake, if he published any excerpts from Molly, like where do you publish this stuff? Because yeah, everything has to be so polished to the point of kind of the old Pink Floyd song, Bricks on the Wall. It's like, I don't know. I never know where to send anything these days, but.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of places taking that kind of writing. I know because when I first started submitting before Hobart, like there were like two places that would publish my writing. So it was great for me to find Hobart. And like, I'm so grateful that Hobart exists and is like a voice for kind of writing that is maybe a little bit difficult and not super like academic, you know. I think it's really important to have that space.
And that's what Aaron and I always were. We weren't academic, and we wanted to see the writing that wasn't academic also. So Hobart's always been like that. So I just feel like it's continuing the way we imagined it, or he imagined it for a year, and then I came in, and together we edited it. So
I'm curious. So do you, like, of all your work, how many books have you published?
Of my own writing?
Yeah.
I don't know, probably 6 or 7
of all your books. Do you have a favorite? Do you have something that like that is like closest to your heart?
I want to say the one I'm working on now, but I also love Saul Stories, maybe just because it doesn't get as much attention. Like it kind of got lost when Persona came out, and I feel like Saul Stories is more cinematic type writing, because I visualize it like a movie or something. So I think it has some funny elements. So I like Saul Stories.
Would you write a script for it?
Sure. I never thought of it, but yeah, that would be kind of cool.
That's actually a great idea.
Yeah, it seemed, I feel like it was inspired, now I can't remember what movies, but at the time I feel like like American Beauty and To Die For, those kind of movies back then is, I guess, what I was kind of going for.
And then do you have any work that's inspired you? Like, do you have, is there anything that you feel has kind of, like, had an impact on your own writing?
Yeah, of course. Like, gosh, there's so many. Like Joan Didion and Elizabeth Wurtzel and Freddie Sinelis and just all the people that a lot of people cite, Dennis Johnson and Raymond Carver and yeah, a lot of people. Right now, Elizabeth Wurtzel, because I'm writing nonfiction, is huge for me. And yeah.
That's awesome. Those are like it, you could it, that could have been my list. That's great. I'm curious. So I noticed that with your play, you're so good, and same with Dear Nico, The Diary of El Elizabeth Ellen. You're so good at like writing stuff that just kind of takes place in a very confined space, but then you kind of go the other way with American Thighs and like you're kind of like cinematic, like it's all over the place. I'm wondering about craft. Like, do you think about your audience when you're writing, and do you have the like how the pacing is going to work and all that in mind, or do you just sort of write and hope that it all kind of works out, because it feels like there's a lot of craft in there, but yeah, they're so different that I'm curious about your process.
Well, it depends. Like with the play, like I said, I was reading a lot of plays and trying to kind of learn something before I jumped into that. With my other writing, usually I'm just picturing a woman like me reading, like myself kind of reading. And then with American Thighs, that was different. That's when I used the 90-day novel book. Is that what it's called? I think it is. Where it takes you through the process of creating character and plot and all that. And I just kind of did it for fun. Aaron and I did it together one winter when we were kind of bored. And so that's why American Thighs is kind of different than the other books, because it was much more thinking about plot and character and stuff.
Did Aaron get something out of that?
I'm trying to remember what he was writing. I can't remember what is it he was working on, but I know he finished it too, so I can't remember. But he really, I remember he liked American Thighs a lot, and that kind of kept me working on it, the fact that he liked it too. So.
That must be great to have like a partner that is in kind of the literary community to kind of like bounce things off and maybe fuel some inspiration.
It was ideal. And also to understand like work ethic and just kind of working all day, but just different times. Like it was great because he was doing the same thing. And so we could be in the same room, both of us working on our laptops and then take breaks and do stuff together. But yeah, it was definitely ideal. And also like touring around together, going to AWP together, all that kind of stuff was fun.
So your newest novel, American Thighs, do you want to talk about that a little bit? I feel like you should plug it a little bit and tell us a little bit about kind of the motivation behind the story and like kind of that like tabloid Hollywood gossip meets like Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing. I loved it. It was so
Bonnie and Bonnie.
yeah, right.
Yeah, it was really fun to write, and I kind of like on Goodreads, it's getting extremely mixed reviews, which I think is a good sign. Like a book like Sheila Hetty's How Should a Person Be? I remember like loving and hating that, and like some parts I just love so much, other parts I want to throw the book across the room. And so I think if a book gets, mixed, really mixed feedback, that's probably a good sign that it's, I don't know, doing something right. But yeah, I was just inspired. I always was interested in child actors and also children of famous people and actors and stuff. And so there's some of that in there, like Drew Barrymore type, Lindsay Lohan type. And then also like the Kurt Cobain, River Phoenix type person, and And also, oh, and then it's based on a real person and a real news story that I read about a woman that she was like 31 and had a 15-year-old daughter. She had gotten pregnant in high school, obviously, and so she felt like she never got to live out her teen years, and her daughter went to live with her mother, so to, with the grandmother. And so the woman that was like 31 like took her daughter's identity and entered high school and tried out for the cheerleading team and actually made it. And the only reason she was found out is she bounced a check for the uniform, and then
Oh, wow.
they figured it out. And but she had mental health issues. But anyway, I remember reading that and being so fascinated that she actually did get in the school and like tried out and made it. And no one really like, oh, is this a 31-year-old? So then that just combined with the like interest in child actors and as they grow up, what happens to them kind of came together.
And so you write about kind of like a taboo topic, like the big age gap, right? Like, how has that been received? Have you heard, have you gotten any kind of like
After some of the Goodreads are like, whoa, I wish I had known what this was about before I picked it up, because I mean, like, it's still a novel though. It's not like nonfiction. It's still
right.
like, can we explore different things in a novel or without it being like, clutching pearls end of the world type. Well, I also, different times we have different perspectives on age. And, at one time a 16-year-old person was basically an adult. Like, you got married, you had kids, and now we view somebody that's 20 as a baby or something. So I'm always interested in that too, because I think until like the 1950s, there was just children and adults, and then there was the word teenager, and so it just makes everything very complicated. And so I was interested in that aspect too. Like in Bonnie and Clyde, Bonnie, I think, was married at 16 to somebody else, not Clyde, and that wasn't even it wasn't like shocking or something. You just got married because you wanted to get out of your house and become an adult and go live your
Right.
life. So the way we view it now is just different. And so I was, yeah, I just wanted to explore those complications.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as someone who was out of the house very early. Like, I moved out the first time when I was 14, and then again a couple times, and was out permanently by the time I was like 17,
You
right?
moved out at 14?
Yeah, I did. I lived
Whoa.
with people I babysat for quite a while. And yeah, it was just kind of a chaotic home life, so it wasn't the best situation. So yeah, I moved out young, and then later I ended up moving in with my brother, my older brother, and his girlfriend, and then I eventually got my own place. But yeah, so but then I also, having lived on my own from a very young age, a lot of the guys like my age seemed really immature, right? So I dated much older, like my boyfriend at 17 was 27. So to me, like, it's so weird to have people be so weird about an age gap when, basically a teenager like can be, can be mature enough to handle it. Some of them aren't, of course, right? Like, it's all case dependent. Teens are all different, right?
Yeah, I dated a 24-year-old when I was 17 also. And you could be 14 dating a 14-year-old that's a sadistic asshole. I mean,
Right, of course.
depends on, I don't think it should be so based on how old the person is, but whether they're like treating you well and stuff. And yeah, back in the day when I was growing up, it's like everybody, when you're a high school female, yeah, the boys were so behind you emotionally usually, and people wanted to date a guy in college, and that was no big deal. It was just
Yeah.
the goal.
But is it more likely the case of like a young girl dating an older guy? Or do you ever
Almost
feel like,
always.
okay.
Yeah, it's very rare that men are more mature than girls, and yeah, I think typically like I didn't ever date guys my age from like right from when I started dating. They were always 2, 3, 5 years older than me because they just weren't mature enough. Like, they seemed like children to me, right? So yeah, I think maturity kind of plays into that quite a bit. Girls just tend to mature a little bit earlier, I think. But yeah, and then online I'll see comments like a 19-year-old dating a 23-year-old, and someone's calling the 19-year-old a child, and I'm like, how is a 19-year-old a child?
Yeah.
It's just really bizarre to me to think of how infantilizing that is, and patronizing, right? Like at 19, like I knew what I wanted, I knew who I wanted to date and what I was interested in, and it's just strange to me.
But you also mature based on experience. So if kids today aren't allowed to have experiences that we would have thought were age appropriate, they're not going to develop emotionally or mentally. So then they
I
might feel
agree with that, yeah.
more like children than we did.
Yeah, I do think they think of themselves more like children still for a lot longer too. Like I didn't ever feel like a child after about, 14 or 15. I never thought of myself as a child, but like my kids that are 12 and 15 still think of themselves as kids, and that makes me happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that. So
Well, there's pros and cons to both of
right.
those. But yeah.
So do you have any, how long are you in New York for?
I'm here till Wednesday. I have a reading Tuesday night, and I'm just hanging out with friends and seeing the city until Tuesday.
Well, that's awesome. Any big plans, any sights that you're hoping to see?
No, just like yesterday, I like getting lost. Yesterday, I got lost and I ended up in Grand Central Station, and I was like, oh, I don't think I've ever been in Grand Central Station.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of fun just to go for a walk and end up somewhere you didn't plan and see different parts of New York. So,
What's the reading?
it's for Patio. Have you guys heard of Patio? I don't know. I don't really know.
Is it back patio?
Back patio?
No.
No.
I don't know. I just got asked, and then there was like a couple of people whose names I knew on the thing, and then they both dropped out after.
After you joined? Jeez.
Well, you can't, because the guy's like, no, it didn't have anything to do with you, but they were on the reading list and now they're not, so I don't know. It could be coincidental.
Who's the name that contacted you?
I don't remember. I
Okay.
don't.
That's
There's two
cool.
guys that run it. I know that, but I can't remember what their names are.
Okay. That'd be wild if it was back radio. I haven't seen them promoting anything though.
Wait, did I get the name of the reading wrong? Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, the back patio is kind of like, didn't they have some controversy or something recently?
Oh
I don't
yeah.
remember, but I feel like they did.
Well, what kind of
There's always
controversy?
controversy
Just
going.
like someone was mad at them for something they posted online. I feel like they did. I can't remember what it was
It
though.
was
Maybe.
Danielle.
Oh, right, it was Danielle
Yeah.
from Hobart.
Wait, she was mad or she was.
Well,
I
because
think it was kind of misogynistic, I think.
back patio lets anyone go into like their account and post like shit tweets for attention. And it was Emily K. Seporia who went in.
I must have the wrong. I think I have the wrong name. I don't think it's that kind of.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. But yeah, Emily K. Seporia, she went in and like tweeted something that she thought would get like she was rage baiting basically. And then Danielle like picked it up and like retweeted it and was like, this is bullshit. Because it was basically misogynistic.
Yeah, and now that you say that, I remember Danielle talking about that. It's bothering me that I don't know the name of it. Wish we had a fact checker. Wait, yeah, no.
Is the series patio based?
See,
Or
that's
is.
could there be two different things?
Oh,
Yeah, it
for
could be
sure,
like the
yeah.
reading series is like a patio as in its name, and then like maybe the people that run it are different. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is it pig roast?
No.
Okay.
We're just sitting here trying to figure out
Yeah,
who
it's
Elizabeth
fine.
Allen's reading for. Do you have a piece picked out? What are you reading?
Well, so I'm reading new material. Either this like super manic part of my memoir or like a much more polished part. I don't know what, but it'll be from the new memoir.
Oh, read the manic part.
That's what Chloe said, and then yeah, okay. Chloe said too. I've gotta edit it down because it's too long. So yeah, I gotta work on that tonight, I guess.
That's always hard trying to get something for a reading that like fits the time slot exactly because it's like you want to finish on like something that kind of resonates a little bit, but you also don't want to go over time and like piss everybody off.
Oh, you know what? I was actually, before the memoir, I was like, maybe I should read from Dear Nico because I've never read any of those.
I would love to see Dear Nico get more like attention. I think it's just such a like, have you read it, Tyler?
I've read parts of it. I haven't read the entire thing.
It's so incredible. Like it's so like it's like I can't believe what she did with like such a limited kind of setting. Like it's really incredible. Like it's almost all just like in one room in her head, and like it's so it's not, I don't want to say claustrophobic, but like
Scary.
you're like, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time reading it, you know, like I couldn't put it down because I just like needed to know what was going on and what was happening, and it was just so incredible. Yeah, to be inside someone's head like that, and because you're so candid and so honest, and you know, it was really kind of an interesting experience to read. It's like it felt like you were inside someone's head. So
Yeah, so I feel like I want to make that a physical book, but add other diary parts also, and maybe change the name. But Gary also said I should keep the name. I don't know. Because I feel like the name is detracting, and people don't necessarily want to talk about it because of the name. So I don't know. But yeah, I'd like to do something else with it. So maybe I'll read from that.
So do you you're have you said you're having trouble like finding publishers and agents now because of the whole the small little one thing you published 5 years ago?
Because of the interview with Alex Perez.
That's insane to me. That's absolutely like bonkers.
Did you ever try to get Monica Woods from like Juliet's agent or whatever?
She said she wasn't doing nonfiction or something.
Oh, okay.
People, no one's gonna, I mean, I don't know what anybody, no one will say it's because of,
Right.
they just say, they just pass. But I'm like, everybody else I know is an agent, and I know my writing's as strong as my peers, so like, why can't I get an agent? So it has to be something like that.
At this point, though, do you still want an agent? Or like, I feel like your whole thing has been like, I'm not agent.
I don't know, but then at some point, A, I would like to make money like everybody else and be able to publish more books through SFLD. And I just feel like my memoir that I'm working on should have a bigger audience. But I mean, if it doesn't, it doesn't. But I don't know. I have to do all the work myself with publishing, which is still a lot of work. So.
Yeah, I don't know how you manage it all, but yeah, I do think you're right because when I first started publishing, like putting my work out, I remember being warned not to submit to Hobart because it would ruin my chances of getting published elsewhere, and it was kind of like the incentive I needed to submit to Hobart.
I've had people, very rarely are people dishonest, so I'm always appreciative when they are honest. But this one young woman sent me something maybe a year or two ago, and I accepted it. And then she emailed me that same day and said, actually, my agent said I shouldn't. Usually they would come up with
Yikes.
a reason, right? But she, I'm
Yeah.
so grateful that she actually told me the truth. Because usually you get gaslit by everybody, like, no, that's not why, that's not why. So yeah, so there definitely are agents still that are probably like, don't be published on Hobart, which is fascinating.
Yeah, it's so weird, like, that it's so like the literary community in general is so like kind of I don't know, like I feel like
Cowardly.
yeah, like it's just like it's really disappointing to see so many people just like not be able to like have a backbone and just be like, okay, this is really not a big deal. I'm just gonna go ahead and do this. And I think it kind of spiraled on itself and has kind of like made Hobart and Elizabeth Ellen a little bit of a like, kind of a black sheep, right? Like because people are scared to submit, and then they don't submit, and so it's like it keeps spiraling on itself, right? People see that other people are scared to submit, and then they don't submit because they're like, oh, well, that person won't submit. Maybe I shouldn't submit either, right?
Yeah, and I think when you're tying your art to making a living, it's going to become problematic because art ideally shouldn't be, even though I said, like, well, I'd like to make some money, but obviously, if I don't, I don't. I'm not going to change my writing or my stance based on that. But, like, if you, because that was some of the people that said, I can't really associate with you, was because they're like, you don't understand. I have to make money. This is how I make a living. So if you're going to put your art in that sense, then you are going to have to compromise because it's such a small world. The literary world is so small. And yeah, you'll be kicked out of the cool
But
club.
it's like that, have you ever seen that video where that guy is like dancing by himself and then everybody's looking at him like he's fucking nuts, right? Like, just like, what are you doing? And he's like, he's just going for it. And then all of a sudden someone joins him, right? And then people are kind of like, they're like, maybe this isn't so bad. And then a third person joins, and then a fourth person. And then all of a sudden everybody gets up at once and joins. And it's like, like you can say, my writing is tied to, my finances or whatever. But at some point, like, if everybody's saying the same thing, like everybody's just publishing and being dishonest and not taking responsibility. Like, someone's got to be the first one to say, you know what? This is bullshit. Like, we this doesn't matter in the scheme of things. Like, and if nobody says that, then it keeps spiraling, right? Like, I
And
don't know.
you just can't have everything either. You're gonna have to have a compromise. And so somebody like Gary L. Lutz, I just admire so much. And she, taught at a community college and had, but that gave her the liberty to live her life and write, what she, because she's not at some, I'm sure she could have had a job at a bigger university, but it would have come at a cost. And so you can't have everything, and I guess if you want to have total freedom in your writing, then you're going to have to give up some of the comforts. And that being social acceptance also, not just financial, but the social cost.
I bet if you continue working and like doing stuff with Zona, I think that would change people's perception because there's so many people over there. It's like it's such a big deal right now.
Zona?
Yeah, Zona, yeah.
I didn't know it was such a big, the thing that Julia's doing.
Oh
Julia,
yeah. It's very popular.
why is it so, what made it so popular so
Just
quickly?
like everyone's like joining in on it.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay. Interesting. Yeah, I never really know. I think because I'm not online that much, I don't know the trends and stuff, so.
Do you feel like not being online kind of hurts your like your brand a little bit? I don't want to say brand because brand is such a stupid word, but like, do you think you get passed up a little bit because kind of out of sight, out of mind?
I would say that it's the reason, like when you were talking about in 22 how I could divorce myself from what was happening, because I just wasn't online. So it's just, when people are like, oh, post something and then don't look at the comments, don't look at whatever, that's how, I don't know. So I don't see it as a downside. I see it as a plus. But probably, I mean, probably there's some of that, because I know people that have like large followings on social media, they're spending all day commenting on other people's social media so that they'll comment on the, it is like, you get back what energy you put in, but I don't want to spend my day like trying to get people to comment on, I don't know, I just would rather spend my time working on the book.
Writing, yeah, and I think it served you well. I joined. I've never really used Instagram. I had it. I was a wedding photographer for years, and I would post like once a month. I would post a photo or something, but never used it like socially. Like, I've never used Instagram socially, and I joined like I started a private account because like most of the people I know don't know I write. Yeah, it's I've got like, just like 200 and some odd people I follow, and I can't keep up with all the posts. Like now I feel overwhelmed going on Instagram. Like Twitter's okay because like the algorithm only shows me like the 10 people I like, and then I just comment on their stuff. But yeah, I find Instagram overwhelming, and I like can only spend, maybe like once every couple days, like 20 minutes on there before I feel like I'm like brain dead.
Well, that's a good reaction to have. Otherwise, you're going to get sucked in and you won't feel that way anymore, and you'll just be spending all your time on there. So I think you can just do your post and sign out and not have to feel like you have to comment on everybody.
Yeah, I agree. But I sometimes feel bad. Like I'm like, oh, I'm missing out on like people's work and like things that they're talking about, and I feel like I should, but I at the same time I just can't. Like I don't have the mental capacity to sit on Instagram for hours and hours and hours. I would go insane, I think.
Yeah, that sounds horrible for your for our mental health. I wouldn't
But
want
lots of people do that. Like a lot of people, they do, and I mean it works for them and helps their career, and that's fine. But I don't understand how people can. I find it like brain
Yeah.
rotting.
It does help their career, but yeah, again, at what cost? Like there's always the other side of it, so good for
I
them.
agree.
Yeah, Elizabeth Ellen, you were talking about this with Brad Listy about how this was kind of like, it felt like a cult.
Or sorority. I think of it too, like sororities and fraternity, Greek life, and bigs and littles, and all that kind of stuff too. Yeah.
Were you in a sorority?
Well,
Oh,
no.
okay.
I don't even have an undergrad degree. I went to college for a year and flunked out. So.
You kind of talk about that quite a bit in Exit Carefully.
Oh, right, yeah.
How was that for you, like trying to go to college with like you had anxiety? You were it, was that what you were experiencing, was anxiety?
I think I was having panic attacks, but it wasn't in the culture, so I didn't know what it was, and agoraphobia somewhat. And I think it was just because when I left home for college, there was no home to go back to. Like my mom moved and was away with her boyfriend, and I just felt very like I didn't know what my life was going to be, and it was like scary. I didn't know what was happening. So, and then I didn't know anybody. It was a big university. I didn't know anybody, and I was just like super shy and super quiet, and I just started not going to class and just staying in my room. I had a single dorm room too, which was also a mistake. Like, my dad was paying for it, and he let me get a single dorm room, so I wasn't meeting people. I was just isolating back then, and I wasn't even an alcoholic.
Do you think if you had social media that would have changed?
Back then,
Yeah.
but people still isolate with on their
Yeah.
phones, but.
Oh, actually, more so now, I would say. Like my girls, since we moved here 2 years ago, they don't hang out with any kids. They just talk with their couple friends from Edmonton on their social media or whatever. Yeah, I think I don't. I'm not sure that would have helped.
Yeah. So anyway, my mother had done the same thing, so I was also probably just repeating what I had seen. Like she went to school for a year and dropped out, and so it didn't seem like a big deal either. It wasn't like the pressure to like finish or anything. No one really cared, so.
Would you ever go back?
At this point, probably not, because I'd have to like do undergrad and everything. So I don't know. I've gotten this far without
Yeah.
education, but
Did you like school? I never liked school. I found it like tedious. Like I hated school.
so when I was in that 1 year, I loved the small like linguistics class or small English class or small creative writing class, but I didn't like the big science class or the other. So it's like I either loved it or I hated it. And the little classes I showed up to all the time, and the big ones, I was just like lost. So yeah, I think I like learning, and I like small classroom and that kind of thing, but
How soon after did you get into like the internet writing community?
let's see. I didn't start doing that until I was like 32. So there was all those years where I was getting married and having my kid and stuff.
How old were you when your daughter was born?
26. Yeah.
So pretty young still.
I'm so glad that I had her like before I started my writing journey because I had no conflict. It was just, I'm just a mom. I'm, well, not just a mom, but I'm a mom, and I didn't have that pressure like, oh, I gotta write today, or I gotta, which that seems like a nightmare to try to do both, like be a parent of a young child and feel like you
Yeah.
have to write every day. Like you're not in that headspace. Like I don't know how, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how people do it. I didn't start writing seriously till my kids were like independent. Like my youngest was like 9 when I started writing kind of seriously. I don't know how moms like one Alexandria, she writes, how many poetry books does she? She's got like 4 or 5 or something. She was on the podcast the other day reading with us. And yeah, she's got like a little one at home, and like she's like in the bathroom on the phone, like whispering because she's terrified that the baby's gonna wake up while she's like doing her reading, right? So yeah, I don't, it's amazing that some moms can manage. I couldn't do it, but I'm amazed that some do.
Maybe we could if we were, yeah, in that, but luckily we didn't till later.
Yeah, I'm glad I started later.
Elizabeth, didn't you like start off like riding like in your car and stuff?
I mean, I would sit in a parking lot and work on on a story or something. Because I remember security guard coming over one time and being seeming like, why am I sitting in this car for hours outside the Target or something? Yeah, I remember doing that. Now that you mention it, I've kind of forgotten about it. But sometimes even now, like to edit something, I'll sit in my car because it's just so lack of anything distracting you.
It's always interesting what you pull up from the internet, Tyler.
Yeah, that was like on HTML Giant, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, HTML Giant. They were like the Zona Modal of the old days.
True, yeah.
Tyler sent me your old website from when you were like first starting out.
Oh, yeah, it's
In
still there.
2006, yeah.
I'm sure Aaron, like, I probably helped with that.
And do you, like, for Hobart, do you do like a lot of the website development yourself?
Yeah, before you got on here, I was saying Pro Jonah does anything like that still. He did it with Aaron and he still helps me with that.
Oh, that's amazing that you have someone that can do that and is dedicated to it.
Yeah, because I would have no idea if he hadn't helped during the transition. I don't know what. I mean, I guess I could have hired somebody else. But yeah, he was really helpful.
Have you considered redesigning the site?
No, but I mean, should I?
No, I just feel like
I like the site design.
it would take like a complete overhaul, I would think.
Yeah, I guess I just don't care that much about the design aspect of it.
Well, and how many years of like work do you have archived? Like,
Going back to 2006 or at least, because I see that when I look back, there's
right. Yeah, I'm not sure that would be worth it for you to try and like redo all of that because you would have to somehow port all of that archive work.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to come out with a new print magazine for Hobart? Or are you guys done with that?
Do you think there's is there value in doing a print issue? Like somebody else suggested that to me recently, and maybe.
Maybe an anthology like over the
Yeah.
past years.
Yeah. I think there is actually. People are kind of gravitating to like a more like analog world. Gabriel Hart, I'm sure you know Gabriel Hart. He does Beyond the Last Estate, and it's like really picking up steam. People are liking having the kind of physical copy of something, you know, like I think people are also feeling like online fatigue, right? Where like you're online too much and you know you want something tangible in the real world that you're like can just, you know, pick up and read. I'd love to see Hobart put out a print issue.
Well, and also like when you said something about an anthology, right away I was thinking of like all the people that were on Hobart that now would probably be like, oh, don't put that in. Like they wouldn't want to be associated with it, like Roxane Gay, or you know what I mean?
Well,
Like,
you think she wouldn't want to be associated with it?
and would I have to get her permission? Probably I would.
I think for print, maybe, yeah.
No, I don't think she would want to be.
Oh.
'Cause she was somebody that was like a big supporter of my work back before the first cancellation. Like she really liked my writing, and then after that she's never publicly said anything.
Well, she pulled her essay from that collection that was supposed to come out, I thought, in support of you.
Well, that was like the one she and most of the other women in that, but then subsequently most of them never said my name aloud. So like they did that, but then didn't support any of my future writing, which they don't have to, but yeah, that happened.
That's gonna be hard to have like had people that you were close with, or at least that like supported your writing and you as an artist, that kind of like pulled away. I can't imagine like that feeling. It must feel like a little bit like a betrayal, like I would think.
Or it just feels like that sucks that that person really liked my writing and now they act like I don't exist or my writing doesn't
Oh.
exist. But yeah.
Well, I've heard criticisms of her that she kind of doesn't acknowledge where she's like come from and stuff, I guess. Like HTML Giant, Blake Butler, and other people like that. Even though, like, I feel like she, I don't know if she needs to, but.
Right. That's what, like, in her defense, and like, does she have to keep saying, like, oh,
Yeah.
out on HTML Giant and then Rumpus, or had a, and her best American short story was on in Hobart. But yeah, I mean, how much does she have to like keep going? It's one thing if she denied it, but yeah.
What are your goals for the next year? Like, are you thinking you'll publish this new memoir this year, or is this kind of going to be something that's a little bit longer of a process?
Well, one of my goals is I've been submitting more to see if any if I get anything published anywhere, you know, like the standard journals. So just trying to submit more, trying to get an agent, just trying to be more focused on at least attempting to get a bigger audience. And then just finishing the memoir. So hopefully in the next 6 to 9 months, I'll have the memoir, or at least a rough draft, finished. And in the meantime, like I have stories I'm trying to send out and essays. But again, with essays, like I have no idea where to send. If anybody knows.
I just send them to you.
I'm like, well, at least there's Hobart as a backup. If nothing else, I can put stuff on Hobart.
I know Zona, they do take essays.
You're really championing them.
Yeah, I do.
Who's publishing with them? Like, who are the names that you?
Well, like, I know, like, Lucy K. Shaw, she kind of runs it with
Oh.
Misha and Juliet.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah, because I know Misha and Julia. I didn't know that she was on board too.
They got like some cool people over there.
So they
I
have a
know
website and
Brian Allen Carr, Ken Bauman, and some other
oh,
people.
okay, yeah. Well, I guess maybe I'll send something to Julia and see if she wants to put it on there. That'd be cool.
She probably would.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'll just drive to West Virginia and make them do it. Like, I know where you live.
When's the last time you guys hung out?
Julia and Scott and me. I want to say, was it before the pandemic? No. Oh, I saw Julia when I was touring with Elle Nash in 21, I think. Maybe that was last time, 21.
Did you hang out with them with Misha?
Oh, wait, you're right. And then, no, like a year ago, I saw Julia and Misha. We did a reading maybe in Indiana. I can't remember, somewhere like that. Yeah, you're right. We did meet up for a brief night. And Brian Allen Carr was there, remember?
What was your impressions of them?
Of Julia and Misha?
Or Misha.
Oh, I love Misha. Like, I've
Nice.
known her for a while too. She's super down to earth, super supportive and sweet person, and a great writer too. All the West Virginia people are seem cool.
Would you ever move down there?
I've talked about it. Like, Chelsea Martin and I were like, we should all go somewhere where it's like kind of cheap and we can all hang out and be close. And we thought about moving to West Virginia with Scott and Julia.
Or do like a riding retreat with everyone down there?
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah.
How's Chelsea Martin doing?
She's good. She's in Spokane. I was just out there last the summer with Chloe, and we saw Chelsea, and I hadn't seen her in like 6 years. And I think she has some new work that she's working on too. She's so talented. So like I am really hoping she gets her project finished.
Is it a novel?
I think so, yeah. I haven't read the pages. I keep trying to get her to send me the pages, but I haven't read them yet. But I know she sent them, I think, to Monica, her agent, the same agent Julia has.
You know, you hang out with Chloe Cadwell a lot.
Yeah, she's coming Tuesday. She's pretty much my closest writer friend.
I was looking back and like her book literally like Women, it dropped like the same day of your first controversial essay. That's crazy timing.
Women?
Yeah. It
Oh.
published the same month.
Okay, yeah, because I remember we were getting ready to go on tour, and we still went on tour, but some people dropped out, like that we were supposed to read with. And yeah, I guess that was 2014 when Women came out. I always forget what year Women came out. Yeah, that was interesting, because then Lena Dunham and people like that got behind Women. It must have been pretty quick. I thought it took longer, but yeah. Women was definitely the best seller of Short Flight, Long Drive.
That's amazing that like a small press like Hobart can do that. I mean, even what is it, backwardness? I see everywhere, like people are talking about it all the time. Like I see it all over my timeline.
Well,
So
that's the good thing. If you a press can be really small, but if you have established yourself as a writer people trust, and or you get good word of mouth and the book gets passed around, like that's why I don't think people should get so caught up in like a press being too small for them or something, because you can still do a lot if you've put the time in, like getting your writing out there, and people kind of know you.
so, and how does that work? Do you just like have like a whole stock of books at your house that you mail out?
Yeah, I do have a whole stack of books at my house that I mail out. Some years ago, it was more official. Like now, I don't have like a home printer because I don't have Wi-Fi, so I hand write the labels and take them to the post office. So it's a little more time consuming. But yeah, in the past, it was easier with the home printing and stuff. But yeah, I ship them out. Oh, because the other thing is I can't get a distributor. So when small press distribution went under a couple years ago, right before I was putting out the latest books, they went under, and they were carrying our books or distributing them to bookstores. And then the new people that took over kind of that for like Rose Book and the other, they won't carry SFLD books. They just were like, nope, we don't want to deal with you, which I assume is a moral stance, because like why else would they not want to?
That's wild.
So I couldn't get any distribution in bookstores at all. So that's why it's all just through the website. You say something and you don't apologize, and every aspect of your life is pretty much affected.
Have you ever thought about doing a podcast or like you can talk about this every week?
I really wanted Chloe to do a podcast with me years ago, and I was just saying to her the other day, I'm like, maybe when you're here, you can be my first guest and I'll do a podcast. But I'm so challenged with all the stuff you have to know technologically. So, but I would love to do a podcast because I was thinking like Marc Maron started his podcast at his bottom, and I'm like, I'm kind of at the bottom, so I have nothing to lose, which is a good for being candid and having candid conversations. So maybe if I find somebody that wants to help with podcasting.
Like, how much help do you need?
Tyler.
What?
Tyler.
I don't really know much of the technical side,
Well, you could just use Google Meets or Zoom, and then you rip the audio off that.
Tyler, you should help Elizabeth
Yeah,
Ellen with
like
her
the.
podcast.
Like even just recording with me and Chloe, like if she comes, I mean, I guess I know how to record, but it would probably be like a not great recording.
How's the back end of it? Like, do you for video editing, like is there what do you what's the process like,
I
Tyler?
just ripped the audio from this and then I edit it down.
I don't even know what rip the audio means. Like, what do you mean?
You go on like it's a VLC and it converts it from like from video to audio.
Maybe we should talk after. Like, I have wanted to do a podcast for a long time.
I think it would help you grow your audience,
I think
definitely.
you'd be great at it too. Like you have such an interesting background and so many cool, like you know everybody. Like you know all the best, coolest, like most interesting writers.
And some are still talking to me and some aren't. But I agree. I would like to do it. So since you brought it up, I feel like it's kind of like saying, oh, maybe that is what your fate is, that you should do a podcast. And there's not really any fun, interesting. I mean, Brad Listie, I love you, but it's not really, it's kind of people being very careful, I think, presenting themselves so their agent is happy. There's not really the fun podcast in the literary world, do you think, like on that level of like a Brad Listie or something?
There's a lot of people that come on and they want things edited out and they want to like keep their secrets.
My favorite thing about this entire experience is when I emailed Elizabeth Ellen and I asked her, because she said, oh, I might change the name of Dear Nico. And I said, do you want me to send you a list of questions before we do the podcast so you can kind of approve them? And she said, no. She said, I don't want to do a fucking boring podcast. She said, ask me whatever. And I think that's the spirit of like, of a podcast, and I think that's why you'd be a great host too.
Well, it goes
So.
back to the censoring yourself in your writing. It's like I'm just bored with self-censorship or like trying to be present something that's not reality. So.
You could even have your critics on and like have them come on and try to get you to like have them try to convince you to apologize, and then at the end of the podcast, you decide whether you apologize or not.
That's an excellent premise. But who would come on? It'd
The
have to
ratings would be through the roof. Like, people would watch that for sure.
whoever the person that was the first person on Twitter that said used the words white supremacy attached to Hobart. Like, I don't know who that was.
They called it white supremacy. Isn't House like Cuban?
I don't understand it, but yeah. I remember that tweet because it was up for a couple weeks, and then I saw that tweet and I was like, oh, here we go. As soon as you, it's like, as soon as it's like saying fire in a movie theater, everybody's like hysterical.
Also, I told Uzo I would bring up your 2017 interview with him on Heavy Feather.
Okay.
Because I guess there was some tension between you guys.
Between me and Uzo, I don't remember any tension, but if he says there was, he and I have
Okay.
been great. Like, I love him too. Like,
Yeah, he said you guys are really good now.
yeah, I didn't know we ever worked.
Because I guess he said something on like Queens Mob's Tea House in 2017. Over something, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember, but yeah, I love is a demon.
You,
So,
because he would make a great guest on your podcast that's coming out.
yeah, he's a good chatter. But who would be the people that would come
Blake
on?
Butler.
Blake Butler is one of my dearest friends, and I would love to have Blake on a podcast. There's few people that I'm more endeared to than Blake Butler, so That would be a great guest. Who else? Who else can
Ken
I
Bauman.
Ken Bauman?
Yeah.
I never really knew him, but is he back in the scene? He must be back in the scene.
Yeah, with Zona. Like
Yeah.
literally Juliet, like he was just doing these like infrequent like newsletters, and then like he wasn't really in the scene, and like literally Zona just like pulled all these like people
I wonder why
together.
they're calling me. I'm gonna be texting some people after Scott and Julia after this. See what's going on.
Yeah, tell them you talk to me because they've been on my podcast.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely will find out. I didn't realize it was so, 'cause they did tell me about it, but I didn't know it was like blowing up or something.
Yeah, he's doing it like Scott's doing a workshop for them this month.
He is?
I think so, yeah.
I never knew. I talk to him all the time, and of course he's not going to text me and be like, "Hey, I'm doing a workshop." So, yeah.
They do like these workshops like every month for like the subscribers.
And people pay for it, right?
You pay like $7 a month to subscribe, and you get like subscribe secret subscriber posts that are selective, and then yeah, you do the workshop. But like very few people show up to the workshop, but I do because like fucking like Bud Smith was at the last one, Julia's there, like Scott's there, Lucy's there sometimes, like all these fucking cool writers I like, why would I not go?
How long have you been in the scene, Tyler?
The like this like alt lit scene. Like I would say like 10 years, but like I didn't have anything like before the podcast. I was just a fan. I'm still
Wow.
just a fan.
That's amazing. I love that there are people that are just like diehard alt-lit fans. That's awesome.
What brought you in, or what was like the book or the writer that you initially, do you remember?
I remember Brandon Hobson when I was at
My
Oklahoma State University.
Yeah.
He kind of told me about Gian, and then I started looking into like I remember that summer like I got Marie Calloway's book. I started looking into Tao Lin and stuff.
That's so funny because I was in the hair salon looking at People magazine and last week, and Brandon's book was like the big book they were reviewing, and I was like, whoa, I didn't realize Brandon's so huge now. And I just reached out to him to see if he'll do a Hobart interview. Yeah, because he used to publish on
LMA.
Ellie Mae that I loved, and that editor really taught me a lot about self-editing. And anyway, so yeah, I was like, oh, I didn't know his books were so big.
Yeah, he's
So
a big deal.
yeah, that's good. I like him a lot. He's obviously an amazing writer. So that's interesting. Yeah, Marie Calloway. It's like, why do people write one amazing book and then disappear forever? Maybe that's like the best thing to do, but also it's like as a reader, like we want more.
And then I think you could have Mira on your show.
Oh yeah. Zona Hotel should get Marie Calloway.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Have you seen her in the scene?
I've never met her.
Oh.
Because I was very New York. I wasn't in New York when that was all happening.
You lived in New York?
No, I'm saying I wasn't in New York, but
Oh, okay.
the people that knew Marie were all in New York and stuff,
All
so.
right.
Do you ever feel like you're like a little bit out of the loop because you don't live in New York? I feel like so many writers live in New York.
I feel like I'm out of the loop because I'm not really in social media that much and don't have Wi-Fi and a phone, and also I don't live in New York, although people seem to think I live in New York. So, yeah, but also I don't care that much. But yeah, probably. Maybe being.
Well, I'm hoping to come visit you someday in Michigan. I have so much family still in Windsor, so I'll definitely be making a trip at some point in the future.
Great. Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, and I also would, Chloe lives in Hudson, which is up the train a couple hours, and so I'm always flirting with the idea of moving somewhere like that too. I don't know. We'll see.
But you know what also pulled me in? Because I ended up dropping out of Oklahoma State in like 2014. And then, even though I went back in 2019, I take classes every now and then. But like in 2015, I found Shabby Dollhouse. And I've just been stuck with them for like since then, and that's really they've opened up this like entire world to me.
Yeah, that's what I remember that being big. That and some was it Girl Gang Illuminati, some other thing that was like Chevy Dollhouse was also out there at the time.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Gabby Best did that.
Yeah, I liked both of those a lot. And I don't know why they folded, but yeah, so those are both interesting collections of writers.
Gabby Best, I think she like moved on to other stuff, but recently she was in a Zona article
She was.
that Lucy did.
I've been so like chronically offline my entire life that like I've only just started learning about all of the like alt-lit history and like before, I knew like the Atlantic, the New Yorker, the Paris Review, and then some local zines and some like maybe Canadian like stuff that you'd find in the bookstore, like the local bookstore or whatever. But yeah, I didn't know any of this existed until like a couple of years ago. So it's really kind of cool to be getting like all the history and like cool to see someone with so much of the history and that knows so much of the history kind of talking about it. Both of you guys seem to have like a good grasp on like how the whole scene has unfolded.
Evolved and stuff. Yeah, and Hobart, I should look back at the archives because Hobart has published a lot of these people too, so I have to look.
Also, did you take Chelsea Martin's tampons?
I read
Chloe is
that.
the klepto. If anybody took them, it's for sure Chloe. Because she stole my daughter's toothpaste. She liked
What?
me. I mean, she said, like, oh, I took Andy's toothpaste. Yeah, so I think either housekeeping or Chloe Caldwell took the tampons.
Okay.
That's one of the funniest things, though. That Chelsea Martin is hilarious. Yeah, and more people should read Chelsea's work.
That was maybe one of the first like Hobart pieces I read, actually.
Was about the tampons?
Was about the tampons, yeah, and I thought it was hilarious.
I should put it back up this week just to surprise Chelsea. Yeah.
I'm glad you read that, Jennifer, or otherwise that would have been a weird question.
No, I did read it. They were all in a hotel together and the tampons went missing, and then Elizabeth said, you have to write a story about this.
Yeah, we toured a few times that group of women, and always Chelsea and Mira would stay together, and Chloe and I would stay together, and stuff would be like in the Mira Chelsea room, things were going on. I don't know what was happening in there, but yeah.
Well, it's been about 90 minutes. Thank you for coming on here.
Oh yeah, thanks so much. It's been really fun, and now I have all kinds of other things to look up on my computer. So, yeah, this has been so great. Thank you for inviting me to co-host. This was really awesome, and it was so great to like finally meet you kind of face to face. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, this was incredible. Thank you.
And maybe now I'll start a podcast. I'll just talk to Tyler and email.
Yeah, I'll email you.
Okay, thank you so
All right.
much. Bye.
We'll see you.
Great, thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.